I sent out a photo, several photos to all of you, actually, of my granddaughter. On the, I was on her first day, actually, in the world. And partly it's because I'm a very, very proud grandpa, which I think is universal and I hope understandable. But there's another element to all of this. And that is, if you look at those photographs, what you are seeing, and I don't say it's distinctive to my granddaughter, but she's definitely emanating this, is a sense of, more than a sense of, an absolute demonstration of presence. Total, unfiltered, unmitigated, absolute presence. She is not looking at the world with any preconception. She is not even yet able to conceptualize anything that she's seeing. She's just there. And she's there with a kind of intensity that is rarely, if ever, mirrored in people moving through their daily life. Because a newborn really sees the world, if you will, as it is, not through any interpretive faculty, just as it is. And then, as we all know through our own experience, we all start to interpret, define, measure, begin to sense past, future, start to feel desire, fear, all of these things that start to come into the picture, some of which are already there in nascent form in my granddaughter. She clearly has startle response, you know, she cries. She also, for infant, I mean, this is very unusual, day one, smiles at you. And she also, as I said last week, looks for your eyes. She seeks out your eyes. And she stares. And we do the same. We just stare. And it's almost like you don't want to look away, because the staring is so primal. It's so phenomenal. You just stare. And whatever you're feeling when you stare into the eyes of a newborn is not unlike what you experience when you stare into the eyes of someone who's awakened, because they're looking out from the same portal, through from the same space. It's so interesting that we have to go through this ride of losing all of that in order to regain it. It's taken me, 60-odd years to even understand what I'm looking at when I look at her. To just gaze at myself, the self, our self. Because that's all we're looking at. You're just looking at yourself. And when you sit in this class, same thing. You're just looking at yourself. Now, I know I'm sitting on a platform and you're not. So you think there's some gradation here. But it's not true, because when I look at you, I am also looking at the same self. But when I look at you, what I see, because I've gone through this process myself over the course of decades, is all of the cloudiness of my life, or of a life. I look at you looking back at me, and I see the dreamer who's not awake. I see the person who wants to present, who wants to be here, who wants to be spiritual, who wants to have some kind of awakened life, and they're sitting, everyone is sitting here, and I had I did this for a long time. Please help me to be awake. Please help me to be open. Please help me to be liberated, free. Trying to be back to that state that I knew when I was a day old. That's all we're trying to do. We're trying to get back to that state. But there is no going back. What there is a awakening somewhere along the way that you never really left that state. That the same eyes that are looking out on the world, that looked out on the world that first day, are still looking out. But something in us, over the course of what appears to be time, clouds up with all sorts of conceptions and misconceptions about what we're seeing. Spiritual work slowly moves these veils away and helps us see more clearly what we're looking at. What really happens is you start to get quieter and quieter, and you start to become less interpretive, and you just start to see again. And when you start to see again through those eyes, the word wonder and amazement occur. Because everything you were interpreting and making to be this or that, that has found such frozen definition, suddenly is unfrozen. And everything around you becomes vibrant and alive in the way it was when you were first looking at life. To return to that space is what the journey of life is about. But the journey is purposeful. The loss of that innocence is purposeful. It has to happen. Because the world as it has materialized in front of you, to be known, has to be known through the particularization of you. This unbelievable infinite universe is knowing itself through exactly what and who you have become. It cannot see itself through anyone else's eyes but your eyes. Your personality, your fears, your hopes, your ambitions, your drives, every one of those things is a way of looking at life that is an explanation to itself of what it is. Your journey is not simply your journey. You are living your life for something much bigger and much greater than you can possibly understand. You are not some amorphous little thing that just happened by chance, that's there for a second and gone. You're also not the most important thing that ever happened in the universe. But you are absolute and essential to it. Your very life as it is, even in this moment, is profoundly significant. And you have to know that, not in some sense of self-idealizing yourself, but in living this life of evolving self-awareness. That's really the drive and the goal of human existence, to become self-aware. For the self that you are to realize its own true nature through your particular selfhood. So there is a kind of obligation, if you will, in being born. And that's really an obligation to wake up, to who you are. Figure it out. And everything in your life is leading you to that. It is the story of your life. And that really is an important idea. Story is, for what most of us sense it to be, it is what we are. We are the story of our life. Take away your story, what are you? Good question. What are you? Take away your story. You're just this pair of eyes, this nose, these ears, this sensing mechanism. But your story defines you. And what's so interesting about every human story is what's called its universal principle. What is universal? Any great movie, book, poem, whatever, any great creative piece of what do you want to call it, object, reaches for that universal knowing. When you stand in front of a great painting, you and everyone else standing there is knowing something through your person that is truth beyond you. It's a singular truth. It speaks to you. And this universality, this sharing of the journey, if you will, is what we're about. Finding the universal is the thing that frees us from the particular. When we all know that we are all going to live, work, struggle to live, have a life, find purpose, find meaning, find joy, find everything that we can look for in life. These are the universals. We are all partaking of those universals. We're all in this together. And when you start to really enter into the spiritual sensitivities of your life, you start to look at your life and everyone around you and their place in the journey. The universal story has what's called a rooting interest. The rooting interest is that one wants an outcome. The outcome that we all want was given to us first in fairy tales, the earliest stories we ever heard, and that's called the happy ending. We all want a happy ending. And almost no one understands what that means. The happy ending in most fairy tales was getting married. Well, anyone who's gotten married knows that's not the happy ending. It's something. It's got a lot of sweetness often in it and pleasure, but it's got a lot of other things. Winning the lottery may seem to people to be the happy ending, but anybody who's won a lottery from, you watch those documentaries, it doesn't seem to be the happy ending. What is the happy ending that we're all craving? It's to recognize who you are. It is to rediscover those pure eyes that are looking out at the world with this sense of awe, this sense of wonder, this sense of amazement. The happy ending is to return to where you were, or to realize that where you are is where you have always been. That's the great happy ending. And it's filled with tears, it's filled with joy, it's filled with this sense of course, of course. And we're all on that ride, everyone's on that ride, and we're all returning to that space. I woke up this morning, it's an interesting week for me, but I had to make a phone call to someone who I love deeply, who's dying, who's going to be here for another, perhaps, few hours. And it was the last phone call that I would ever have with him. And finality is such a powerful thing. What do you say as your last words to somebody? Knowing they're going to be your last words. Well, first of all, you tell people you love them. You tell people they were an important and worthy part of your life and that you're grateful to have shared your life with them. And then I have found a phrase that seems to have been helpful to people along the way, at least they've told me it was, and I repeat it a lot to people who are dying. And I say, trust the journey. Trust the journey. And for many people, that's the first memory they have that they're on a journey. Life has become so obscured that they don't remember. But boy, do you get their attention with trust the journey. These last moments were filled with something very beautiful, and we could tell. I mean, I could tell on the phone that presence was talking to presence. Again, you get people's attention very greatly when they're in their last moments. But it was so clear to me now, watching my granddaughter be born this week and watching someone I love deeply leaving, that we are arising into and departing from this extraordinary place. This extraordinary place. You can call it Adventureland, Dreamscape, Life, whatever you want to call it. We're here, and we have infinite opportunity to explore it. And of course, what happens very quickly on is you discover that your part of that infinity is limited. First of all, you discover you're a guy or you're a girl. It makes a big difference in how you're going to see things. You discover whether you're beautiful or not beautiful, whether you are loved or not loved. There's a lot of things you start to discover, and they start to shape you. And it becomes your particular character that's being formed by life. And in the beginning, you can work around that character. You can say, no, I'm not going to go there. I don't like that. You can rebel. The two-year-old, anybody who's ever had a two-year-old knows at 2 years old, it's like, no. They say, no, I'm not going to do that. They are taking charge of defining their character. And it's really fascinating to watch. And then that comes up against certain things like, don't you do that. You know, no, you can't have that. I'm the father, I'm the mother, whatever it is. It's like you take control and the little entity starts to reshape and reshape and it grows and it grows and it finds this endless sense of who it is within the limitations of all of its physical and now emotional and psychic sort of connectivity, whatever what you want to call it, the body armor of life. And that's who you are. If you are lucky, in the middle of all this, some kind of spiritual lightning bolt goes off and it says, you're not that. And you start to try to figure out how to get out of it, how to get out of that thing. And you really do start to free yourself. You start bit by bit. You meet someone like Rudy, and Rudy has had this practice of teaching you how to be bigger than all of the forces in life that seem to create you as you are. And you start this process of liberation, self-liberation, and you get rid of parts of your ego. You get rid of some of the fear-based life that you've been living. You get rid of some of the desires that have been leading you down paths that are creating problems. You start to really take charge of your life, and you become actuated, self-actuated. But the problem still is that it's a self, and it's a mind, and it's a form dictated by the strictures of material existence. And then, somewhere in the process of this struggle, be it the end of your life, the middle of your life, or the last moments of your life, the structure falls away. You die. Spiritually, the first thing that falls away is the ego mind that thinks it's separate from life. That's called liberation. There's no you there. There's no person who was created by the world. It just ceases to exist, and you go back to clear seeing. But there's still a body. And at some point, that body also falls away. And you become what you were before you had a body. Liberation in your life gives you a sense of what that is. And most of us call it presence. That presence seems to be absolute, infinite, and eternal. Whatever this body is, even that is just a part of this temporary structure, this housing, so that this remarkable thing called life can observe and taste itself. The only difference between this falling away at the end of your life, at the last minute of your life, and somewhere in the middle of your life, is that you get to live life differently. And everyone sitting here listening to this talk has an opportunity to experience this extraordinary state of being before the body goes away. To live life with extraordinary clarity, with a kind of joy and appreciation that seems to be what life was created for. And you get to walk around in a state of grace. I think the wish of any spiritual teacher is that you find that grace, that you rediscover your innocent eyes, that you look at the world again without filters, and you see it as it is, and that you get to enjoy it in its most pure and absolute sense. And you will know when that takes place, that if there is a goal in life, an end to the story, it's that. That's what's wanted. That's what the universe has been working toward. Each of us, and if in some perfect way, all of us can awaken to that purity of being, purity of seeing, hearing, smelling, tasting. The world will have become what it most wants to be, which is in a sense, paradise. One of the great things I've discovered with awakened people is there is no competition. There's no need to be number one, the most awakened person, the anything. They just walk around joyfully sharing this amazement. And that's all they do. They just almost can't talk about it enough, can't reflect on it enough. It's just like, huh. And you become so simple and so non-egoistically involved with it that there really is no understanding in the sense of knowing. There's only being. You just are. And the only thing that separates that state from the normal state is just The normal state is asleep. It's like going through life and struggling and dreaming, and this just goes, oh, ah, ah. So you're all somewhere in your journey right now. Every one of you is in your journey. Every one of you has either a very demanding hunger to awaken or a very mild curiosity about it. You wouldn't be here if you didn't have some interest. Those people who've come here were coming here so they could have peace of mind have left. Because one of the things that I've been saying now for a number of weeks is that you can't have anything. You can't have peace of mind. You having peace of mind is a very temporary condition. When you falls away, there is nothing but peace of mind. The falling away of your separateness is what ultimately gives you the very thing you were looking for, minus the you. But it's not a loss. Again, I tell you this over and over, it's not a loss. It's only a gain. You gain the universal over the particular. You gain the universal self, which is who you are. So I'm about to leave on this 6-month journey, giving birth to my own grandchild, if you will, the son of ghost. It's a labor of enormous love, but it is a labor, and it's very hard for me to leave my granddaughter, and it's very hard for me to leave all of you. I mean, separating myself from teaching really for 6 months I haven't done that in 30 years or more. All I can do is tell you all that I love you deeply. And I hope you're here when I come back. And if you're not, well, onward. But I'll be here. I'll be back at some point. I may come back for a moment or so in the middle, and I will certainly send out an email if that's true. But when I'm not here, there are wonderful people sitting here. And as I wrote to them yesterday, to all the teachers, I said, you don't have to teach from an awakened place. You have to teach from where you are at. Teach what you know. Don't teach what you hear or what you think or what philosophy tells you should be taught. Teach what you know. And if we all live by what we know and we all exist in what we know, we will serve each other. And there will be people sitting here every Sunday morning being themselves, being what they know. And that is of great service. And if you come and sit with them, you will find yourself opening up to a different part of yourself with every different teacher who sits here. The value of working with different teachers is the same thing that happens when you're teaching and you work with so many different people. You learn to open to the unknown configuration that is yourself. You know, most of us gravitate to people who make us comfortable and people who we like and people who are easy for us. But the great thing about sitting with people who are not easy is you have to find aspects of your own being that are not easy. And you free yourself to be one with that. Sitting with a teacher or sitting with multiples of students, it's all the same thing. You're learning how to open to what is. So I encourage you all, come. Be part of this. Don't let this fall away. Usually it's interesting, only the teachers come and sit with the teachers. Everybody else is part of this. Everyone else feeds and nurtures this situation. So I ask you to please keep it going and nurture it. Also, I said I'm going to try, I think, the reason I bought this camera was to see if I could do this from London. I have no idea whether I can sit and just talk to one of these. You know, it's much easier to talk to you. But if I can, it'll be posted on the website and you guys can go there and see if there's something waiting. And if not, you know, sit by yourself, it's just as good. Thank you guys for coming.